Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Change Your Mind podcast, where we explore personal development, spirituality, and science. I'm your host, Chris Ashley. I am really excited for today's episode. We are going to talk about finance, but also finance from a personal growth and spirituality and mindset angle, which I really geek out on. I think all my listeners know that. So really excited for my guest today. First, couple quick announcements. Head over to the links in the show notes. Not only are you going to find my amazing guests link, but you are going to find a link to my book, Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality. It was endorsed by John Gray, Michael Beckwith, Bob Doyle, Marcy Shimoff, Anita Morjani. If you're in the spiritual personal development realm, some of those names probably ring a bell. You'll also find links to sponsor the podcast, links to my courses and coaching. And as always, this is a part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network. Kind of sounds weird that a Tribune, a newspaper, owns a podcast network, but we are blowing it up in the personal development sphere. I think we have like 8 events, live and virtual, coming up over the next few months. I just was on stage with Les Brown and Sharon Lecter, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. You probably know that, my guest. Mary Morrissey. Joseph McClendon. So got such cool stuff going on. Stay in touch with us. Get involved. Hi, I'm Chris. When I was younger, I went through trauma that caused me to feel broken and lost. But my life changed after I had a spiritual awakening. Since then, I've dedicated my life to studying and learning from masters all around the world that have helped me to create a life of fulfillment and abundance beyond my wildest dreams. Now I'm dedicated to sharing everything I've learned so that you don't have to suffer for decades like I did. I've seen people's lives completely transform, and I share it all right here. All right, so with me today, I have David Delisle. So David is the visionary founder of The Awesome Stuff. He's a TV personality, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and real estate investor. His expertise and innovative approach to financial literacy have earned him features on prestigious platforms such as TEDx, NBC, Fox News, Forbes, and CTV's The Social. David's journey into the world of finance began at the age of 11 with his first investment. By 20, he had ventured into real estate, and by 40, he was semi-retired, enjoying the financial freedom he had meticulously built. His groundbreaking work, The Golden Quest, is the first and only graphic novel dedicated to teaching financial literacy. And I know he really focuses on kids, which is really, really cool. So David, welcome. I'm so glad you're here with me.
I'm so excited, Chris. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And like I said, I love talking mindset. I love talking spirituality. And I love talking finance. And we're all going for financial freedom, right? That's like everyone's goal, freedom of schedule, freedom of finances. So I'm really excited to hear your take and your advice on everything. But first, I always start my episodes the same way. And that is by asking my guest, what is their origin story? And I know we kind of just touched on it in that bio, but I would love for you to share what set you on this path that you're now writing this graphic novel and you're coming at financial freedom and money from that spiritual and mindset lens?
Yeah. So, I mean, you're just asking earlier about my kids. So I've got a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old, both boys. And so when they're a little younger, I wanted to write some stuff for them or actually start teaching them financial literacy. And I noticed there wasn't a lot of stuff that talked about it the way I thought about it. And so that was sort of inspired me to write the book. But it's funny, like as I've started having these conversations, trying to figure out like that origin story, a lot of it came from my dad. And not because he taught me, it's I watched what he was doing and didn't want to do what he was doing. So he was blue collar worker, commercial diver. And that's not the problem. It's that he hated his job. He hated his job and he was away all the time. So I grew up, you know, without a dad. He wasn't present too often. And he was always chasing and always going for the next thing. And just to maintain the lifestyle, he was back at work. And I just remember thinking there had to sort of be another way. And that's where like this mindfulness, it's so much bigger than people think it is. I mean, your guests are going to, they'll get it, but especially in the financial sphere, because in the financial sphere, so often it's more, 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 how do I have more? And unless you get the mindfulness and that piece nailed, that chase will never end. You will never get to a point where you have enough. And so this to me is the most important lesson of any when it comes to financial literacy.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. And it's so true about that chasing more, more, more. So, I mean, it's pretty amazing you made your first investment at age 11, right? What was your first investment at 11?
Well, and it was a terrible one. I went in with my dad to a bank and he talked me into something I didn't want to do, but I totally geeked out on this stuff. So I would read finance books and learn about compound interest and learn about all these different things. So when I had enough, he took me into banks so I could finally make my first investment. At that point, I got like a government bond that was terrible because I was young. I didn't need the security. I didn't need the low interest rate. It was one of these things that just, he convinced me to do it. And then my money was tied up for, you know, two or three. I remember I think it was 2 years. I remember watching this thing for 2 years being like, once this is expired, I'm going to do something else. I'm not listening to my dad who didn't care. And I'm going to, you know, invest the way I know you can invest. And now it's a little bit easier. But at that time, like it was, again, trying to invest in the stock market, leave it for the long run, not stock pick, go with, you know, a good mutual fund and advisors. I was geeky. I was reading up on advisors and all of this stuff, which you don't have to do now. But yeah, getting the habit of investing early is probably the key point, not the actual investment.
Yeah. And it's so interesting. It's like when you, like, I love to geek out about it too. Not as much as you have, but I like to read those kind of books too. And it's so, when you're in that bubble, it's so clear, but like the majority of Americans don't even understand like the difference, like what's actually an asset, right? Versus a liability. And it's so interesting about breaking it down to basics for people. But I have to ask, so what investments do you like to make? I know you're real estate, but you know.
Yeah. I mean, I love real estate because I like real estate. But for me, again, all this is trying to keep it simple. So that's what I find. Like when people talk financial literacy, I'm a money nerd. I love financial literacy. So I'll geek out on it. Most people don't love this stuff and you don't have to love it. So I think it's the details that people get bogged down in, and they start thinking like, well, I got to understand this and what are the stock markets doing and macroeconomics. And just, I have a little scene in my book where the little boy's like, okay, I'm excited. What do I do? And the guy just rattles off all these things. And you see his eyes like glaze over. He's like, or, you know, you could just sort of automate it. You could find someone to look after this. It doesn't have to be that complicated. So what I recommend, and the simplest, is trying to get the average of the market. Anyone trying to beat the market over the long run loses. Even Warren Buffett doesn't beat the market consistently. And so trying to get the average of the market is the goal. And that's where, instead of trying to beat it, you buy all the stocks so that you get the average. You don't try to time the market and try to invest in a specific, you know, day or get it when it's high or get it when it's low. You invest all the time. So you're investing all the time, you're investing in the entire market, and then you get the average. And it doesn't sound sexy, but it's traditionally like the stock market's pulled out a 10% average return. And that doesn't sound sexy, but this is back to when I was 11. And I think most people who do get excited about this stuff, what starts getting them excited is when they see what happens over time, that compound growth. So you find out if you started investing like 7 years ago, this money would be like generating more than you're investing. Like that's incredible. And so it's all these little things where you start seeing it grow, grow, grow. And I remember being like 10 and thinking, oh, if I could do this for 20 years or 30, if I could do this for 40 years, like it would, just seeing how that compounds, that's where it starts getting exciting. And I think that's what most people miss. They think in terms of what can money buy instead of what can money earn. And once you start realizing what can money earn, it changes your whole relationship with money.
Yeah, absolutely. Because money is just a tool, right? And it's how you use that tool. So do you think real estate is a good way to, and we're going to talk about mindset, but I'm just fascinated by your take on everything. So do you think real estate is a good way to actually earn and like let your money do the work for you? Or do you think it's more of a place that you can park your money once you have more of that financial freedom?
So I love real estate. But real estate is but real estate's tricky. So people who want to invest in real estate, it becomes a bit of a job, definitely in the beginning years, almost a full-time job. And that's what I don't think a lot of people realize. Like, real estate is not passive by any means. So you really have to understand it. There's a lot of risk. And, you know, I definitely took a lot of lumps. And that's where, if I look back in the past, it might have been just simpler being in the stock market. Now, where real estate is really powerful is, for most people, their home is their only investment. So that's why it's such a good investment. And it's, again, over time. So if that same amount was in the stock market instead of the real estate market, your returns might not necessarily have been much lower. But then again, this is where you start nerding out. It's leverage that makes a difference. People don't fully understand that. So interest rates, leverage. If I can buy a $100,000 house with $10,000, that $10,000, even if the $100,000 house only goes up, you know, a few percentage, it's tenfold because my investment was a tenth.
Right.
In terms of actual returns. But again, that's where it starts getting really nerdy and you're watching these things. And unless you want the stress and dealing with, you know, appliances and renovations and tenants or...
Tenants. Yeah, I was going to say, you got to say tenants on there.
Yeah, all those things, then it's not for you. Do something else. And that's the thing is, I think when it comes to financial literacy, people all of a sudden start jumping to, well, I need a side gig and I need to do this and I got to create a job. And you don't. It's using the money as a tool. Do what you love. Do what you're good at. And it's going to be different for everyone, and what interests everyone is going to be different, but you don't need a side gig. You take the money you make and invest it, and it compounds. And in 20 years, if you're saving, you know, 20% of what you earn and investing in the stock market, just not even looking at it, just automated, and leave it for 20 years and keep doing that, your investment likely will be earning more than you. That's just like, it's incredible how easy it happens with compound growth, but it's not easy because that's the mindset. And that's why I really focus on the mindset.
Yeah. So is that how you were able to semi-retire by 40? Just stock market?
For me, it was personally, it was a lot of real estate.
Okay.
But, and so I did well in the real estate. Yeah. And I like the job, but that's where I look back. I think of like my boys. I don't think they'd love real estate. A lot of my friends, they don't love real estate. I've had to deal with evictions and, you know, homes getting ruined and, you know, trying to figure out how I'm going to subsidize a reno when I don't have any money coming in and putting it on credit cards. Like, there's a lot of stress with real estate. Now, because I've been doing it for over 20 years, I can just look at a house and know, like, that's a good investment. That's a bad investment. That will make money. This is good for, you know, for cash flow. This is good for appreciation. Like, I get that sense now. But that took over 20 years to really start getting to the point where real estate's easy for me now. And that's what I like to tell people. It doesn't mean that I wouldn't recommend real estate. And I love real estate and it's done well for me. And it has for a lot of people. But it's just like anything. It's a skill set you need to learn. And in those early years, you might make a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, you had to hone your skills. Also, adding to that list of things you have to deal with now, squatters, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. That's like a crazy thing happening in the world or in the country. So what do you think about Bitcoin and blockchain and Web3 and all that? Have you invested in that?
So those, I really haven't. And people, like, I've got lots of friends in that space that are like, come on, David. Like, I've maybe dabbled a bit, but for me, it's riskier in the sense of, the investments I try to make, if I'm buying something where, like, if there's no one on the other end that wants to buy it off me, there's still value in me having it. So like the real estate, that's still a house and it's still land. Or if I own stocks in a company, like if I own a Microsoft, I own a piece of that company. I don't see Microsoft disappearing quickly. So if I held it for 10 years, I probably have value in it. Something like a Bitcoin or these things, there, it's new technology and there's a lot of money to be made, but it is risky. So we hear about the people who have made a lot, but what we don't recognize is that if people have made a lot of money, the same amount of people have lost a lot of money, right? Because there's always two sides of the coin. There's always a buyer and a seller. So there are people who bought, saw a crash, panicked, sold, and lost money. And what scares me about something like that is if we get to a point, like I like the service side of it more because I see that as not going away, but the actual coins themselves, you're relying on being able to spend those coins. And I don't see that as a guarantee. Like right now, we already see governments trying to change it so you can't use those coins. And countries are not going to be happy if they see their currency being devalued and all the power going to these non-government agencies that they have no control over. So there's, you know, your Bitcoin, like my question to people would be like, your Bitcoin, what if nobody would buy it for you? If you weren't buying it because you thought you could sell it to someone for more, you're just buying it because it was like cash that you could spend. How much is that worth to you, especially if you can't spend it somewhere? So it's, there's a risk to it. It doesn't mean don't get into it, but I see that as different than a long-term investment that you're not thinking about. One more quick thing I'll add is time. A lot of people don't associate time with their investments, but it's really important. So if you're buying these things and also really wonder about the people giving advice, is their time frame 6 months, 1 year, 10 years, 20 years? That makes a big difference. And a lot of times they don't tell you what time frame they're looking at. So the people who are making a lot of money, they're not looking at Bitcoin as a 10-year holding. They're looking at it as like 1 month or 6 months, maybe a year, and they're in and out. That's a different type of investment. And if you're not familiar with it, you could get hurt by that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, my husband and I definitely invested a lot in Bitcoin, but it seems to follow the market, like the stock market. Like we've just been holding. So, and it's, you know, it's gone down, but it's gone back up. And it's, I don't know, it's interesting to talk about. Just curious your perspective. But let's talk about mindset because that's why we're here. You know, it's kind of a big question, but like, what is your mindset that around financial freedom and around wealth, you know, like what do you teach people?
So the first lesson I talk about a lot is the awesome stuff. And the lesson I teach in my book, when I talk about kids, it's only buy the awesome stuff. But what's really fun is when I say it, like it just sounds so simple and it sounds, it's just like mindfulness, like just be present. And people are like, whatever, like I am present. And you're like, no, you're not. And the same idea around the awesome stuff. You feel like all your stuff is awesome stuff, but it just can't be. That's not how things work. You can't love all your things the same. You have a favorite piece of clothing. You have a favorite gift. You have a favorite thing you like to do with your time or people you like to spend time with. And so this idea about the awesome stuff, it's really mindfulness, but taught under this financial lens. So when you're thinking about things, just ask them, is this my awesome stuff? And that question itself will really start creating this journey. Same with mindfulness, where you start realizing what really brings you joy, but more importantly, the things that don't. And you'll probably start realizing that most of the things that you thought maybe were bringing you joy, they aren't the things that make you happy. And we're spending time and money on the things that don't really make us happy. And you see it all the time with, you know, people that'll, you know, be really wanting something. And then there's a tragedy, you know, they lose their job or there's a market crash or there's a death or someone becomes sick and their priorities instantly change because they realize what's really important. And that's what this sort of does. It helps you align your priorities before that tragedy. So you realize really what is important. And what I love about this, a lot of financial literacy is all taught around like budgeting and sacrifice and just things that nobody wants to do. But if you do it, like you push through, you did the hard work, you sacrificed, now you're wealthy. Whereas this mindset piece and the awesome stuff, it isn't that because it's not a sacrifice. It's those other things when you really know what's important to you. Just like I mentioned, like the tragedy, if something's happening and you want to help a loved one that's sick or their house burned down, you want to help that family. You don't care about, you know, the car that you wanted to buy or the trip you're just going to, you're planning. Like that seems so insignificant when held up to what's really important to you. And that's all this is. And again, noticing that's going to be different for everyone. So without the judgment, my awesome stuff is going to be different than the next person's, but you start seeing those things. And it makes more sense. Like I'll leave some room for a follow-up question, but then I could tell some stories where it starts making sense when you see it in action. So I talk about some kids, I talk about some adults, and you can start seeing like what I mean by that and how it really will shift your relationship with money.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I was going to ask too, where I was going to go with it. Like, okay, so like you figure out what is important to you. You know, I'm sure most people are like family, right? Like instant. So what do you do with that? And how does that tie into building wealth?
Well, even how you're talking about freedom, not everybody is chasing freedom or realizes how important it is. Mm-hmm. And so people might say family, but their habits are taking them away from family. So take my example with my dad. He might have said family as well, but because it was so important for him to earn more, create a better life for us. But then it was like, then it's a bigger house, then it's more cars, then he's buying like, you know, a Harley Davidson, or, you know, doing renos of the house and putting in like a games room. So he's constantly away and working and doing this job where I grew up without a dad being present. So it wasn't family. It was all these things that he wanted to purchase and buy and chase. And so that's where you start seeing some of this weave into to really figuring it out. And so there's a fun story that I think of, like, I love working with kids. So some kids that wanted a puppy, which for most people, like, that's an easy, awesome stuff. Like, I want a puppy. Kids want a puppy. Like, we love dogs. We love animals. Yeah. But again, when you start seeing it shift, is the dad at the time wanted to send his wife to school. She really wanted to go back to university, which is also extremely expensive. And he told the kids, he's like, well, you know what? Right now, like, my awesome stuff, I really want to send mom to school. And the kids, as soon as they heard that, immediately shifted. They're like, forget the puppy, let's send mom to school. And they got all excited about it. They have that empowerment. This is something that they're just, you could feel almost the excitement. Like, we're sending our mom to school and to do this thing. And they completely, like, you know, they still wanted the puppy, but it wasn't something that was important anymore. And that's where all of a sudden you break the cycle of chasing more, because sending mom to school is what's important to us. So when you see your friends with a puppy, you're not like, ah, oh, we can't afford it. It's no, guess what we got to do? We sent our mom to school. And it's, again, going to be different for everyone, but it does really start shifting those things. Freedom's a great example that I don't think people fully realize how much freedom they can create by spending less.
Yeah, thank you for walking me through that example, because I wasn't quite following, but I think what you're saying is it's about shifting your perspective so that you're not in a victim mindset anymore. You're like, it's not like, oh, what was me? It's like, oh, this is what I get to do. This is what I get to have. Is that correct?
Yeah. And that's the problem, is right now, a lot of this is around victim mindset. It's around sacrifice. It's around, I can't have these things. I can't afford these things. But this is really shifting it to empowerment. What is really important to you? If those things are important to you and you want to work those longer hours to do it, then that's your choice, and own it and love it and be like, no, like, look what I've done. I work hard so I can have these things. But if it's, you know, I just want to have like a weekend where I don't have to worry about work or think about anything and be around the kids and not be stressed, that's going to shift your buying behavior and your work behavior and what's important to you. And then you're having picnics with your kids or going for walks. I think COVID was a good example where people were just stuck in the cycle. And all of a sudden it was like a forced pause to reevaluate. Like, you can't go, you can't work right now. You can't go to the office. You can't do what you normally did. And then people started like walking their dogs or making lunches at home or having, you know, more time with their kids and realizing, oh, this, I don't have to be in traffic. I don't have to be in an office. Like, I can do these other things that I enjoy more. And again, some people realize I love the office. That's where my friends are. That's where my social circle is. Like, I don't want to be at home. I want to be at work. I want to be at the office. And it's just, it was just a forced reevaluation. So you can recognize like what is it for you? And like you mentioned your, I can't remember, daughter or son, son. So young. So right now at that age, like you want to spend time with them. Some people. And then all of a sudden that's going to shift. Like what, how important is that in terms of what changes you make so you have more time with him or not? And it really is that. It's the empowerment without the judgment and noticing, again, just like mindfulness, the more you really notice how you feel about things and what makes you happy and what lights you up and what your favorite memory was the past week or the past month, or your favorite purchase or thing, the thing you know, you're still excited about 6 months later, you'll start realizing, oh, there's not most of that stuff that I was spending time on and money on. I don't even remember. I don't remember what it was because it wasn't your awesome stuff.
Yeah, I really like this idea because, you know, like so much of what I teach is what you focus on becomes your reality. And you can look at that through a woo-woo lens, but you can also look at it through a neuroscience lens, right? And it really does become that North Star. And when you have that goal, you're more likely to make changes, right? You're more like when you have a goal that's more important than what you're doing right now, you're more likely to shift your behavior towards it, right?
For sure. Like an example, because we're just talking about real estate. We were in this like amazing, beautiful dream home. But the home just before that was also my dream home. And this one was bigger and better and then became my dream home. And I could see after that, there'd be another home and they'd just keep growing and growing and growing. And I remember just, I love travel. I love going to have that freedom with my boys. I love going to volunteer at their school. So we sort of as a family talked about it. And we're like, hey, and again, there's not a right or wrong answer, but for us, would we rather stay here? Or if we sold this place, we could travel a bit more. We could do more adventures. I wouldn't have to, you know, work would be a little bit easier. I would have a lot less pressure so I could spend more time with you guys. What would you rather? What's more important to you? And so for us, we sold that place. And again, we loved it. It was an amazing place. We still, like, if we drive by, we're like, oh, like that was such a great place to live. But we're not, again, not the victim mindset because we just did 3 weeks in India, me and my two boys. And it was this crazy adventure. We had all this freedom. We had all the time. And we were able to do this adventure that like their friends haven't been able to do. And it was just incredible. And that for us is our value. And you notice those things. Like, again, what you focus on starts to become your reality.
That's such a beautiful example. Thank you for sharing it. So when someone's trying to figure this out, like, you know, because you made the statement, like most people think what's most important to them is what they've been like kind of told is most important. And it's not like really them. Like what advice do you have for someone to just like boil it down? Like how do they really figure it out?
It's tricky. I love to do it when I'm one-on-one because I can pick up on someone's body language. And that's like the biggest tell. So someone who says, oh, you know, my awesome stuff is even family. But it's just like sort of deadpan. And they're like, yeah, I love family. And you're like, oh, do you love family? Like, is that your awesome stuff? And then all of a sudden you start talking about something else, like, you know, their car or sports or their kids or something. And all of a sudden they light up, their body language changes. They lean in, like that's a good telltale, like a good sign to know like that really is your awesome stuff. Like what lights you up? What gets you excited? What makes you smile? And so I love doing it one-on-one with people, but when I'm just sort of talking to a large group, I'll start walking them through some scenarios. So a lot of it becomes comparison and people ask, especially the kids, like, well, what if I don't know it? Or what if I get it wrong? It doesn't matter if you get it wrong. Like the thing is it will shift and change over time. It's just recognizing like, oh, I thought it was, you know, this, you know, whatever. I'm just trying to think, like, I thought it was my awesome stuff was shopping or getting new clothes, but it's like, no, like when I put on my one sweater that I love, I light up every time. And the rest of the closet, I don't even touch. and you start noticing those things. And then that's when I mentioned, like, is it your awesome stuff? Once you understand, it doesn't even have to be your awesome stuff, but you know what you love the most. So what's your favorite piece of clothing? Now you're going to buy something. How does it compare to that? Mm. When you're going to get that new shirt, that new sweater, that new pair of shoes, how does it compare to your current favorite thing? Mm. And if it's like, eh, then it probably isn't your awesome stuff, but you're like, no, like this thing I am excited about. You start noticing that, and it becomes easier and easier and easier, because those things just, you start to realize what really lights you up. And especially when you move from things to experiences, it really starts shifting. You know what my awesome, like for me, my awesome stuff's always connection. So I noticed that, like I said, I walk around these homes and I'm like, oh, like it was nice living there, but I choose hanging out with friends on a patio or going on trips or, you know, having dinners and just laughing with friends, doing board games. Like that is my awesome stuff. Teaching kids and connecting with them. Like connection for me, that's so important. So if it's in a vacuum and there's no people around and no connection, it's just, it never lands for me. And I've noticed that over time for myself.
I love that methodology, even like, but just shopping or how you're going to spend your time, because I totally see what you're saying, where it's like, it's not about sacrificing those things. It's like, no, that doesn't hit my bar, right? Like I want to hit my bar, go above it. So it's like, it just falls away, right? It loses its magnetism almost because it's not it for you.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to ask you a question that I ask every person that's on here that talks about finances or money mindset. So I'll use one of my mentors as an example, Mary Morrissey. So she built up this like multi-million-dollar company, and then she lost everything overnight when it came out that her husband at the time had embezzled money. And the newspapers like dragged her name through the mud. They thought she was involved, which she wasn't. Like her ex-husband ended up going to jail for a year. And so she was bankrupt. And she, within like a year or two, built another multi-million-dollar company, paid all the money back, and is like thriving. And there's so many stories like this. Like, what's the guy's name where he even went on a TV show and they gave him like $100 and he built like a, what the hell's his name? You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah,
I follow
him
on Instagram. but there's some people that can just build and scale and just, it just like seems to flow to them. So what is it that they have that other people don't? Because they started at the bottom, just like everyone else.
I mean, it's always mindset. So that's why this is so important. And it's how you see money. Like you mentioned earlier, seeing money as a tool. Like that's the thing, is so many people associate feelings to money. So, and on opposite ends. So you'll have people like, if you have money, you have to be a bad person. So there's just this massive rejection of it. Or if I had money, I'm a great person. And so I'm going to just try to like have and show and buy all the things. But money doesn't care. Like money is just a tool. So once you start seeing it as a tool, and that's why I was mentioning like people thinking of money as what it can buy. That's not how people who turn money into millions think about money. They think about it in terms of what it can earn. So even with me, when I'm like, is this my awesome stuff? Freedom's also really high as a personal value. So if I'm going to buy something, I don't think of it in terms of like, do I want this shirt or do I want this clothes or this car, or this bike or whatever it might be? I think about its long-term cost. This thing, if I don't buy it, I might earn $10 a month or $100 a year for the rest of my life. What would I rather have? Would I rather have that income stream or this thing? And it just really starts to shift things. So I think that's the thing, is when people see it as money as a tool that can create money and become an income stream, people think that they have to become the income stream. So even these side gigs that everyone's talking about, that's what I was mentioning. Like there's nothing wrong with a side gig, but doing what you love to make money is much better than just trying to like work hard doing something you hate to just like get a little bit more, especially if you're spending everything that comes in. Like most people as well, they're spending everything that comes in. So the house they live in is the most expensive house they can afford. The car they're driving is the most expensive car they can afford. And so they're right at that limit, no matter how much comes in. So you double your income, you just double your expenses, and you're no further ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everything you said is so important. And I want to go back to that idea of like how a lot of people view money, where it's like people have a money story, right? And I like this example, and it's starting to get like a little outdated now, but if you remember back, I think it was like a year ago now, that submarine that went down to see the Titanic wreckage. Yeah. So the submersible or whatever it was called, wasn't a sub, but so everyone on there was like billionaires, right? Or millionaires, like very wealthy people. And of course, all these news outlets were covering it on social media. And I don't know about you, but I read some of those comments. They were freaking nasty. People were like, oh, too bad. Another millionaire is gone. Like, oh, great. Like, fuck the rich, right? All, like all of these things. And it was like, damn, like one, like with that mindset, like, do you think you're ever going to like accumulate wealth? Like if you, it's just such a tell, right? It's just like, you can see your own envy and your own story coming out, but also like, these are human beings, have compassion. They knew what was happening, right? So, I think about that a lot, but I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about like people's money story and like what you've seen. And like, how does someone who grew up hearing like money doesn't grow on trees or money is the root of all evil, like over and over and over again, till it's like, you know, becomes your own belief system. Like, how do you break out of that?
So that's why I'm so passionate about teaching like kids, because that's how we start really breaking cycles. Like my goal is to change the way an entire generation thinks and feels about money. Like right now, it's just, it does have all this emotion tied to it. Whereas I really try to teach, you know, personal choice, autonomy doesn't have to be this really heavy thing. So even just something as simple as conversations, like start talking about it, because right now we don't talk about it. So if you grew up with a specific belief, you don't talk to anybody to change that belief. You don't see any examples to realize that's not true. And so just like anything, I think of just, even if you get out of money, but just, you know, with race or religion or any of these, you know, ethnicities, it comes down to exposure and just being around people that you're going to meet really evil people with money. And you're also going to meet really kind people. The money isn't what makes you good or bad on both ends of the spectrum. It's the person. And people really associate money with, you must be bad if you have money, or the rich must be able to afford these things or have a responsibility to do this. Or we put so much just weight and judgment and shame on the other. And it's, you know, in both ends, you know, the rich doing it to the poor, the poor doing it to the rich. And really, I'm trying to eliminate that shame and that judgment and the way we talk about it. And there is no right or wrong way to do it. But awareness is massive. So most people don't realize the choices they're making, that they had more choices available to them. That's financial literacy to me. It's not understanding stock markets. It's understanding what your money could do instead. And once you understand what it can do instead, you might make a different choice. It doesn't mean you will, or you have to, or it's even the right choice for you, but you might. And most people just don't realize what it can do. And those blocks, I mean, I just encountered this yesterday, like trying to talk to someone about money and investing in these blocks. People have so many blocks around money, and they see it as an evil, and they see making money as evil. It's just not. It's not. And our biggest philanthropists and people, you know, making change and an actual like noticeable difference, like all the people funding, you know, cancer research and things like that, like it's people with money. Like it takes money to do those things. And so it really is important that we start realizing that it's not the money. It's the money's just a tool.
That's such a great point, that all these people doing good in the world could only do it because of money. Like Tony Robbins likes to say, money just like magnifies like who you already are. If you're like a greedy asshole, it's going to make you more of a greedy asshole. If you're a really generous, loving person, it's going to make you more generous and loving because you have more to give, right? And I like that you went back to like people with money, like placing blame on other people with money, because it goes back to that victim mindset. And this is a topic because my book and my podcast are called Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality. This topic comes up a lot in conversations, regardless if it's about money or not, right? Because we live in this society where it's almost become trendy to play the victim. And especially on social media, because you get pity, you get attention, you get to get out of things, right? But placing blame on others is really a way to like stay in your own comfort zone of playing small, right? And not stepping into your power. And it comes from a place of your own pain and fear. So I really like that you brought it back to that victim mindset, because it's easy to blame all your problems on the 1% or on the wealthy, because then you don't have to take accountability to change anything, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly it. And then chasing to be the 1%. Again, with this idea, like the mindfulness and is this your awesome stuff? I'm pretty content and pretty happy. Like I'm not chasing more, because the more is not going to make me happier. Like my friends, my social circle, this spending time with my kids, like that's what brings me joy. More like it's always nice to have a bit more freedom and more ease. And like you said, like money does amplify things. Right now, money's a bit more of a concern for me because I'm trying to amplify my voice and get this message out there. But it's all about getting a message out there, empowering people, creating a movement. It's not more for me, because I really just want to spend time with my boys and my friends.
Yeah. I love that. I love that because, yeah, you can find like happiness and peace in what you have right now, right? You don't have it's that like, I know you're also studying to be a shaman, right? I remember you told me that, but it's something about like being, and maybe this is more of like a monk mindset, but it's like about being in the present moment and being in the now rather than just like constantly off, like chasing the future. And I think there's a balance, because what I teach a lot of is like, figuring out that dream life, mapping it out, figuring out the steps to take. So like, the future planning is important, but you don't want to do it so much that you like miss the present moment, right? Because this is all there is, the present moment.
Yeah. When it's all the present, like that's what's moving. So I remember, this was not even that long ago, maybe 7 years, 5 years, seven, 5 years, being in like Disneyland and being on a ride that we just waited for like a half hour, an hour to get on. And I'm on the ride thinking about like lineups and like how to like game the system so I can like get to the next ride the fastest and get in line and get on. And I realized like I was so in the future. Like I just spent all this time to get on this ride. I wasn't even enjoying it. I'm sitting beside my kids, they're laughing, they're having a good time. And all I'm thinking about is, okay, so how do we get on the next one? And how do we get on the next one as fast as we can? So we can get as many rides in today as we can. And that's so common. And again, this mindfulness, all of a sudden it breaks that cycle. You just like be in the present. That's where the excitement is. That's where the joy is. And planning is great. And you do need planning. But you really, if you're doing anything that you wanted to do, be present and enjoy it. Because that's the whole point. It's enjoying what's around right now. And if you're in the present, you can enjoy it. If you're in the future, it's all anticipation. It's not real life. It's make-believe. It's not really happening. And the only thing that is happening is the present.
I mean, I would say that's a beautiful mic drop way to end the episode, but is there anything that was just lovely. Like go rewind that, listeners, and listen to that again, because that's just take that with life, for life, all of things. But is there anything that you really wanted to hit on today that we didn't talk about, or that a message you want to get out there to people?
Big thing that I tell people a lot with all of this is we just need to start talking about it. Mm-hmm. Just start talking about it. Like right now, financial literacy, money, finance, like you said, all those nasty comments about the people who died, we don't talk about it. And we judge it and we make it this thing where we feel bad if we don't understand it. As soon as we start asking, like even with kids, like I've got parents who are like, well, I don't understand money. How am I supposed to teach my kids? Tell them that. Oh, I never was taught about money. I don't understand it. Why don't we go into a bank and ask for some advice? Why don't we ask our friends who we know invested and bought some real estate how their experience was? Did it go well? Did it not? Just start talking to people about this stuff. It doesn't have to be complicated, and we make it really complicated. It's as simple as, you know, just talking about it. And even with your kids, when you go to buy something, let them know how much that thing cost. That's it. And that, like, that's financial literacy. It's not reading books. It's how much do you think it's cost, and what are our priorities?
Yeah, that's such a good point, because I think it's so intimidating for a lot of people, but it doesn't have to be. Mm-hmm. Well, but I think that goes back to their story. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally. It's again, goes back to their own mindset and their story. And it's like, oh, that person's not going to want to like tell me things like I should know this. I'm going to feel stupid or whatever. I mean, honestly, this goes back to schools. Like, they should be teaching you how to do all this stuff in schools.
Yeah, which I would love to see more of that. And I know that a bunch of states are starting to mandate it. And I try to get into middle schools and do talks to the kids, the students, the parents, trying to teach this stuff. We really do need to talk about it more, because it's funny that it's one of the few things where we feel we should know. Like, yeah. Everything else, we're like, well, we'll go ask for help. You know, I don't even have to fix my car or even know how to change the oil. That's okay. But I should understand finance and then macroeconomics. Like, it's crazy.
But yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that there is that, like, idea, that feeling that we should know this already?
I think it's back to those money stories, shame and judgment. Like, we have a tendency to judge people on what they have. And if you have more, you must be better. You must be smarter. You must be, you know, harder working, more successful, something. You're better. And that's not the case. And so, again, I alluded to the trip we did in India. One of my things I loved about it most is we were hiking in like the north in Ladakh and staying at homestays and seeing how other people live. And they didn't have running water. They didn't have toilets. They had very little food. But we weren't looking at them as they're worse than us or more better. They had beautiful lives, long life expectancy, super happy, so generous. We felt so welcome, so comforted. Like, it, this whole better and associated with, you know, what people have, I think that's a lot of it. Like, if we're scared that our friends knew that we didn't have enough money or as much as they did, they would think less of us. And the problem is in most cases right now, that's true. And that's where, if we could start having conversations about this and realize, like, it's not money that makes someone good or bad. And we just really need to change that conversation. But we really, right now, we glorify money and assume that more money is better.
That gave me goosebumps hearing about your experience in India. And it's like, we're all just having this human experience, right? Like, right? We're all just incarnated on planet Earth, and we're having the experiences we have. And I mean, honestly, the people they say who live the longest and are the happiest are the people who have community around them, right? And love and friendship. And they're, yeah, I don't know. It really just brings it down to, like, what's really important here.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's, so these people, like I said, they have financially nothing, and they're living longer than most of us, longer, happier lives. Why is that? And we sort of lose it a bit and think we've got to chase. And then we have all these miserable, you know, millionaires and billionaires because they kept chasing, and they never did find that panacea, that happiness, because it's not about the chase.
Yeah. Plus we're all stressed the hell out because we're chasing and we're working and we're not with our families and we're not feeding our souls. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Back to mindset. That's why anyone who asks me about financial literacy, what's the most important lesson and what can I do? Mindset. Your relationship to money is going to have the biggest impact on your life, hands down.
Thank you so much for this. This was such a lovely conversation and I really, really appreciate your time. And I'm sure anyone listening wants to know where they can find you, how they can connect with you, what's your book called, all the things. So please, if you wouldn't mind sharing.
So the book is The Golden Quest and it's a graphic novel. You can find it on Amazon, your local bookstores. And for myself, I try to base everything around The Awesome Stuff. So theawesomestuff.com, Instagram's at The Awesome Stuff. And if you go there, you'll learn more about me. I can come into schools and speak. I love working with middle school children, even though the message I talk about is for adults, I just like kids, but it's all the same. My message doesn't change whether they're 5 or 95.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, David. It's been such a pleasure. If you are listening, please comment, share, subscribe, like. If there's someone you think could use this message in your life, send it to them, you know, especially because one of David's messages is we need to talk about it more. So break that silence. And thank you all so much, everyone. Have a beautiful rest of your day. I will see you next week.